And just a few words of introduction, Adam Tuptim. He grew up in Tibet, and then went, as he was telling us today, then from there went to Nepal, then India, then United States, and early age began to practice in the Nyingma tradition of Tibetan Buddhism. That's the oldest of the four schools. And he came to the United States in 1993. That's when we first met him at Pema Hosoling, which is a center in California founded by Lama Tarchin. And from the beginning, he had an aspiration to teach in English. And so he really absorbed our culture in amazing ways and has gained this great proficiency, both in terms of language and attunement to who we Westerners are. And he's the founder and spiritual advisor of Dharmata Foundation. And this seems kind of choppy. Is it working? Somehow it seems choppy. I don't know. In Port Richmond, California, which is north of Berkeley. There he teaches at times in very traditional Tibetan ways, but he also really teaches to Westerners in ways that will connect with them, which is what he's going to offer tonight. And he's very, even though we practice in Theravada tradition, his understanding of the Dharma is very broad, so it kind of embraces and interweaves Tibetan tradition with what we do here. And he teaches widely in the U.S. and abroad. He's author of several books, Choosing Compassion, No Self, No Problem, Into the Haunted Ground, and the Citadel of Awareness. He's married with two children, and he's teaching here on a dana basis, which means the teachings are just freely offered. No one's, you know, paying him or anything. So just freely offered, as has been the tradition since the time of the Buddha. So you're very welcome to make a dana offering. There's a basket out there. There's a QR code out there. And it helps keep him teaching and being able to support his family. He has two daughters. We were just talking about it. One's in college and one's in high school. So, okay. And he's leading a weekend retreat in Olympia. So he'll be doing a talk tonight. And a Saturday teaching. Is it all weekend or just Saturday? I'm not sure. Yep, and then a weekend retreat. Yep. So if you go on the Dharmata Foundation website, which is like it sounds, or you can look on the thing out there to see how to spell it, and you can register, and it'll tell more about his retreat. I think that's it. Thank you.
It's nice to be here at Seattle, inside Seattle. I was here last year. Since then, this very temple is created. Last year, I think this temple was in the process of creation. It's already here. It's nice to be at this very temple. I feel the sense of a sacredness and also wonderful presence, a blessing, perhaps created by all the practitioners, meditators who come here. In Buddhism, we talk about this notion, adhisthana, or blessing, in Tibetan, chinlab. It's hard to translate that term into English. So far, they have been translating adhisthana as a blessing. I translate that as a liberating or sometimes transforming potency. You can feel that presence or the wonderful energetic field, the transforming potency. And perhaps you can feel that simply by sitting here. And the heart presence or that energetic field is created by all of you who came here and meditated perhaps many hours. So I'm very happy to be here. And now we're going to chant together a prayer, refuge prayer. I only know in Sanskrit, you can chant that in Pali. They are very similar to each other. In Sanskrit, it goes, Buddham Sharanam Gacchami, Dharmam Sharanam Gacchami, Sangham Sharanam Gacchami. It sounds very similar in Pali as well. Let's chant that prayer together and feel that we are somehow leaving our usual mind behind, the busy mind behind, and to enter a sacred realm, sanctuary in our own mind, in our own consciousness. Sometimes the chanting mantras, prayers really can create this feeling that now you are in a sanctuary, sanctuary within. Let's chant that together, then I will do a sitting meditation. Buddham Sharanam Gacchami, Dharmam Sharanam Gacchami, Sangham Sharanam Gacchami, Buddham Sharanam Gacchami, Dharmam Sharanam Gacchami, Sangham Sharanam Gacchami, Buddham Sharanam Gacchami, Dharmam Sharanam Gacchami, Sangham Sharanam Gacchami. You might like to just settle into your body. You are all perhaps well-seasoned meditators, but as a reminder, you might like to have your back straight, let your shoulders relax. You can join your hands or rest them on your knees. They both are mudras or sacred gestures. Joining hands together is the mudra of equanimity. Resting your hands on knees is the mudra of resting in a pristine nature of mind. These hand gestures have a significance in the Buddhist tradition, and also they have some kind of almost a somatic impact on our mood and our mind. Now relax into your body in the same way the Shakyamuni Buddha sat under a tree when he was known as Siddhartha. He sat and he even vowed that he's not going to get up from his position, his meditation position, until the enlightenment shines upon him. You might like to feel that you are right now sitting in the same posture as the Siddhartha who become known as a Buddha. I feel that you're very much grounded at the center of your being. Feel equilibrium, dignity, but not a rigid kind of dignity field. There's also ease everywhere in your body. And you might like to just drop into your body, begin to feel sensations, notice all these changing subtle sensations, your feet, cool, warm, tingling. And then you might like to bring your awareness into different areas in your body. Notice all these changing sensations. Body is a wonderful doorway to the present moment. When we are simply observing the sensations of our body, then we are here, we are at home. Our mind is no longer wandering. It's no longer lost in the virtual reality of the past and the future, but we are here. And there is this benevolency that comes along with when we are completely in the present moment. There's a quality of groundedness, and no longer fragmented. There's even healing power too. Let go of all your worry, all your to-do list. Just relax into your body, relax into the present moment. And you might like to bring your attention to breath in your nostrils. You can close your eyes if you want. Now simply observe that you are breathing in and you are breathing out. Notice each breath, each in-breath, each out-breath. Sometimes it's kind of hard to concentrate on breath. You can use this technique, counting your breath. Any number between 5 and 10, like 1 in, 2 in, 3 in. Or you can simply rest your attention on each in-breath, each out-breath. Notice it, that you are inhaling, you are exhaling, and sometimes you can even feel the changing temperatures in your nostrils. Notice when you breathe in, the air is a little bit cooler. When you breathe out, the air is a little bit warmer. And then you might like to be aware of even these subtle changes in your body in conjunction with each breathing. I've noticed that your chest expands when you breathe in, and it contracts when you breathe out. Notice that by simply concentrating on your breath, your mind becomes quieter, your thought subsides. In Buddhism, they talk about going into the hermitage, and then there's the outer hermitage, but there's an inner hermitage, the true hermitage, which is the silence, the serenity. So allow yourself to enjoy relaxing in this hermitage, this inner hermitage, sanctuary of serenity, stillness. Sometimes it's wonderful to feel that the world disappeared, the time stops, there's just this pure stillness. It's wonderful to take a break from the thinking mind every now and then. Come back to breath. Whenever a thought arises, remember to return to your breath. Now you may let go of your concentration on breath, and then relax into your body. Let go of every idea you might have about what you are supposed to be doing right now. Rest in the mode of a non-doing. Relaxation ease or effortlessness. Then notice that at the moment you let go of the single pointed concentration, or reveals this awareness, this natural awareness that is aware of sounds, sensations, color shapes. Feel free to open your eyes whenever you want, or you can also close them whenever you want. So don't try to concentrate on any object, just leave your mind alone as it is. And then thoughts will rise. And remember not to follow your thoughts. Other than that, you don't have to push your thoughts away. Thoughts will arise and dissolve on their own. Welcome all the experiences, stillness, peace, joy, relaxation, thoughts about the past, future, maybe even resistance to the present moment, like boredom. Invite all of them, and don't choose one over the other. Welcome all of them, but don't hold on to any of them. Let them dissolve on their own. Continue to relax. Don't seek any special experiences. Instead, just welcome whatever is unfolding right now. And feel that this is a perfect moment. The moment that is complete, and feel that you are sitting on the perfect place, as if this is a Bodhagaya place where Buddha become awakened. don't add anything to your present experiences, and don't try to also take anything away from them. Just leave your mind alone completely. And welcome all thoughts, all moods, all experiences as if they're the same and they're true nature. pause and see what is happening in your mind. You might like to even inquire, am I fully present or am I lost in my thoughts? You may find out that you are completely here and you are fully present, and then continue to relax in the awareness. If you find out that you were lost in thoughts here and there, then simply acknowledge it without any further comment. Let go of it and continue to relax in this natural awareness. Please close your eyes. And then rest your attention on breath again. Now allow yourself to feel that you are in touch with your heart, or you can just drop into your heart energetically. Feel that right now you are in touch with your heart. You can even put one of your hands on your chest. That can sometimes help us to feel that we are in touch with our own heart, our emotional and spiritual heart. And then say in silence that my heart is already free, full of love, compassion, courage, and my heart has the capacity to embody equilibrium, dignity in faces of all situations, and even has the capacity to transcend all limitations, including ego, the self-centeredness, and imagine that you have invited your loved ones right now. Imagine that your children, your parents, your partner, your sisters, your brothers, your cousins, all your siblings are sitting in front of you. Honor that you have this powerful karmic bond with each of them in this life. A karmic bond that cannot be broken. Then imagine that you are looking into the eyes of each of them and begin to acknowledge the struggles that they are going through right now. You may know that some of them are having physical difficulties like illness, all sort of health issues. Or you may know that some of them are having emotional upheaval, anxiety, fear, hopelessness, shame, guilt. Or you may know that some of them are going through right now challenges in their career or in their relationship. Here, feel that your heart is big enough to bear witness to all their suffering. Just continue to bear witness to their suffering without any judgment or criticism or blaming. Now, imagine that you have invited all of your friends and they are sitting in front of you on your right side. All the people with whom you have a positive connection in this line, people who write birthday card to you. Then imagine that they have invited one person or group of people who challenge you, who often somehow evoke your own aversion, judgment, prejudice. Imagine they are sitting right now in front of you on your left side. Now, imagine that they have invited the whole humanity, people from everywhere, from all over the world, regardless of their race, color, gender identity, religion, nationality, especially invite those who are sick, those who are hungry, those who are oppressed, those who are stuck in the vicious circle of poverty, injustice, misfortune. Then imagine that you are looking into the eyes of every human being with this universal compassion, unbiased loving kindness, and then begin to bear witness to all forms of suffering that people are going through in this world. Hunger, illness, tragedy, trauma, anger, fear, confusion, despair. And now feel that your compassion is also expanding towards all beings without any exception, including animals such as birds, dogs, cats. Then you may repeat after me in silence. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings never be separate from joy that knows no sorrow. May all beings abide in equanimity free from bias and hatred. Oh, Shamachava Sem Chorum Bo Che Maki Banam Chigiri Chi Kiba Nyamba Me Baya Kuni Kundam Perver Shu Asha Sama Asha Sama Asha Sama Asha sama asha sama asha sama asha sama. Shall we take a break for a few minutes? And then followed by the Dharma talk. Om ye dharma het prabhava hetandeshan tathangato haryavatite shanchayo nirodhyam badamaha sharamanaya svaha. O kanzandur samgarva kru sampama karajimanikana soza namya tetan jatsatu katravlama namna sorva deva. Shakazin Roda Jisitra Timelzayam Tukhtemzal Osara Lonchen Namki Namjara Jigmelam Pijabla Sorva Deva Tame Kumjo Simji Ngo Nye Kamsam Jarva Jamtu Jyosum Cho Kamsam Chiji Jarbo Zochen Pab Dijamlam Pijabla Sorva Deva Kundi Tanyam Chunya Rorvara Totra Ngonjara Sanji Topra Kho Sāyī kātāṁ tātāṁ nupcīṁ kātā trīṁ kātāṁ mīyī kāṇāṁ tāṁ rūhā kīñjī rānāṁ jītāṁ bātāṁ ca kātā tākī chūtāṁ tō. Hello, welcome everybody. This afternoon, my two friends, Tim and they took me to a really wonderful restaurant, Steve. It was this wonderful Japanese restaurant. We had almost like a reunion. Last year we went to the exact same restaurant. They ordered the whole tray of a Japanese dish. It's called something, I forgot the name.
Bento box?
Something like that. I don't think I ever had a dish is like a ceremonial. It's almost the art with all this beautiful colors and the sushi, the rice roll. Then we talked about the common ground of all these lineages within Buddhism, because Buddhism is not a Sangha. It's actually very pluralistic. Even though all the Buddhist traditions revere Buddha as a source of their wisdom. But there is a common ground in all Buddhist traditions that can be called mindfulness, awareness, or introspection. In Tibetan tradition, we often use the term awareness quite a lot. So awareness is really the common ground for all the Buddhist practices. But what is awareness? I think awareness is sometimes very simple. Other times it can be interpreted as some kind of non-egoic, non-transcendent state of consciousness. If we give a more practical, down-to-earth explanation on awareness, then it is about to just witness or to bear witness. That's what really awareness is. And when we come here together, sit, that's what we are doing. We are simply bearing witness, or we are simply witnessing. How about that? And as you know, meditators, that's what we do. We just look into our mind and we witness. We witness whatever is unfolding, thoughts, sensations. We don't judge them. We don't try to control them. Sometimes we may have this almost some kind of very collective habit that meditation is all about doing something to our mind, like altering it or to manipulating it. But it turned out that meditation is actually not so much about manipulating, altering your mind, or to somehow manipulate your mind into more spiritual experience. Instead, it's more leaving your mind alone as it is. And therefore, they sometimes coin this term meditation beyond meditation, or non-meditation meditation. So in that sense, meditation is almost not meditation. On the other hand, of course, it is a meditation. There is a verse that I often quote. This verse was composed by Dzogchen master from the Nyingma tradition, my tradition. Longchenpa, he basically wrote this verse. I always quote this verse as meditation guidance. This verse goes something like this in Tibetan: don't manipulate your mind. Don't manipulate your mind. Don't hold your mind. Don't hold your mind. And sometimes, yes, meditation is actually about manipulating your mind, holding your mind, and so forth. There is, of course, a place for more like this kind of almost effortful meditation too. There's like practice. There's all kind of practice, even in Tibetan Buddhism, where you try to intentionally manipulate your mind, or where you even hold your mind too. All these practices are, of course, very useful at some point. But in the end, the heart of meditation, which is awareness, and that has nothing to do with altering or manipulating your mind, which reminds me of a story sent by somebody. I don't know whether this is a true story or not, but it's a story that really clarify the very idea of awareness that is taught in Buddhism. A group of scientists invited three people who are totally from different ground. One is a Swami from India, from a yogic tradition, a Hindu guru. Another one was a Buddhist monk or nun. Then another one was average Joe, just an ordinary person who never meditated. Can I call average Joe? So, and then they created this scientific lab where they made a really annoying noise. They wanted to see how people react to that really irritating noise. Maybe they're told that that's what is going to happen. First, they invited Swami from India, Hindu guru, and he just went into samadhi, meditative absorption. And he was gone, basically completely, which is very amazing because most people cannot do that. And that is an amazing feat, don't you think? If you're able to just enter into samadhi, where your company is gone, your ordinary world is dissolved, where you can literally block all the sensory experiences, just relax in a very blissful state of consciousness. For most people, this is a huge achievement, something we all should be jealous of him. So whenever you have a difficulty, all we need is just sit and just go into samadhi. Goodbye to this trouble of all. Okay, call me when everything's okay. When there's some conflict in your life or in your office and community, you can just sit and go into samadhi. Say, once you are finished all your conflict, call me back. Or maybe I come back in 4 years from now, you know. In 4 years, next 4 years, I'm going to samadhi. I'm going to eat samadhi food. That's what I need. I will be just breathing gently. I'm sure some pulse is going on, but I will be gone. And hopefully after 4 years, everything's going to be okay. Not so crazy as now. And then I will come back from my samadhi. So anyway, he went into samadhi. This is a joke. Then the scientist made noise, but he didn't hear because he literally immersed into samadhi. Samadhi can be sometimes almost like a sensory deprived, spiritually induced transcendent experience, which is kind of amazing. And he didn't hear that noise they created. And then they invited that average Joe, put him through the trial. Then they made that annoying noise. This man who never meditated got really scared. He almost jumped from the seat. Then finally they invited this Buddhist monk or nun, put her through the trial where they created this really annoying noise. But this Buddhist meditator heard the sound, that noise clearly, but sure he didn't react. I tell this story every now and then. It really captures the heart of awareness taught in the Buddhist tradition. Either that is taught as a mindfulness and Theravadan tradition, or the awareness or Rigpa that is taught in Dzogchen tradition. Awareness is really about witnessing, not judging, not adding any extra concepts or opinions or concept interpretations to the reality, but also not to subtract anything from the reality that could be inner stimuluses like mood, thoughts, sensations, or could be external stimuluses, sound, noise, or even event situations which are happening, and yet they are, of course, transitory, they are constantly changing too. And so many of you are obviously wonderful meditators. I can smell the meditator vibe if I'm right. This meditation vibe happening around. What do they call? Sometimes they call meditation pheromone, right? So I assume that you're all really very good meditators. So what do we do when we meditate? We just witness. That's all we do. We witness our thoughts, witness our emotions. And they are amazing. When you witness, they're amazing. They're not really troublesome. Sometimes when we don't know how to meditate, we have a really conflict with our own mind. I think most people have conflict with their mind and world. And many people don't like their mind. No wonder why many people have conflict with their mind. I think a very famous psychiatrist said that people are afraid of three things: death, other people, and their own mind. And totally makes sense that people are afraid of their mind, because many people really don't know how to work with their mind And they are very much at the mercy of all their experiences, thoughts, emotions, opinions. And so, yeah, many people actually, I think they don't really like lots of experience they go through. But people go through lots of negative experiences every day, like blame, judgment, shame, guilt, confusion, anxiety, stress. People go through a lot of negativities internally every day. It seems to get worse. I remember years ago, I think another group of scientists or somebody did this research on human experiences. They come back with the conclusion that the average human beings have around from 50 to 70,000 thoughts every day, but most of them are negative. Most of them have to do with shame, guilt, complaining, blaming, judgment. That's why there is a lot of unhappiness in the world. It seems that the human unhappiness is actually on the rise. It's not actually going down. Somebody from Jungian Institute made a statement a while ago, psychotherapy has been around 100 years, but we are getting worse. even we have all the therapy, all these wonderful methodologies, but somehow I think human unhappiness is on the rise. And that has to do with, of course, lots of external factors. Maybe it has to do with the social media. I think so. I think social media is playing a very powerful role in our collective anxiety, stress, unhappiness too. But we are very much living in a world that is ruled by social media. It's very difficult to unhook yourself from social media too. I propose recently a new form of a sacred fasting. I do know that fasting was almost the universal religious observances all in all traditions, Hinduism and also in Christianity, Buddhism. In Buddhist tradition, we always practice fasting. Even lay people observe fasting in Tibet every now and then. I was a monk for a long time. I had to practice a semi fasting every afternoon for one, I think almost 2 years. These 2 years are worst times in my life, by the way. I guess I'm not doing a very good job to advertise the monastic tradition right now. After this, perhaps none of you want to become monastics in this lifetime, maybe next lifetime. So we had a fasting ceremony, and people feel really powerful transformations. They feel that their whole consciousness, the whole system is being purified, like basically detoxicated, feel very light and happy, and almost like people experience some kind of profound peace. Basically, they feel they're purified of all the karmic tendencies. But in modern day, we really don't do a lot of fasting, but maybe we can introduce a form of spiritual observance. We can call it sacred fasting, which is maybe to not indulge in social media every now and then. Wouldn't it be nice if we can pick up here and there, maybe one day every few weeks, just don't open your cell phone, don't turn on your cell phone. Maybe that's impossible, but maybe we can just have a day of sacred fasting where we don't do much social media. So anyway, we are living in an age that We are so much bombarded by all kind of information, news cycle. And therefore, I think these are maybe contributing as a factor for the this ever-increasing unhappiness and anxiety. This is a pretty much a universal phenomenon. So anyway, what I'm trying to say is that many people really don't know how to work with mind. So lots of people actually don't like their experiences. I don't think anybody likes anxiety. Have you ever run into somebody who says, "Oh, I love anxiety. I really love fear. You know, I need more fear. Oh, I love so much fear. I need more fear." Most people don't like fear. I don't think there's any human being who are crazy about fear. Fear is not a pleasant experience. It contracts you. It's just you feel that you want to run away. You want to run away from the situation, or you want to run away from the present moment, or sometimes you want to run away from your skin, which is impossible. And yet, so many people live with a fear every day. And some fear are rational, but most of the time, I think most fear are irrational. It turned out that most fear are actually irrational. Steve and Tim, we were talking about this Tibetan Buddhist practice called Chut, cutting through. It's a very powerful Tantric Buddhist practice in that it was developed by a Tibetan female mystic from the 12th century. Her name is Majigal Abdon. And she developed this technique, Chut. It's a Tantric Buddhist technique based on the Mahayana sutras. So Chut means cutting through, cutting through. There's also this connotation of a radical cutting through your identification with your neuroses, such as a fear, especially fear. And so many people do this practice, Chut practice. In Tibet, we actually sometimes go out for 1 week, or sometimes we go for months, sometimes we even travel more than 100 days by carrying this a tent called a chopa, a one-pull tent. You carry your tent and maybe bag of food, or sometimes you may have a vanyak and that you bring as your pickup truck or something like that, sacred pickup truck, if I can say that, or vehicle. And then you travel. You travel from one place or another place. And intentionally, you go into places like channel ground, cemeteries, where you experience fear. And this whole practice is actually not to run away from fear, but to face fear, to even wake up all your fears. And then you simply witness your fear, and you come to realization that there's a way that you can cut through your identification with the fear. At the end of journey, you are able to go beyond many of your fears with this realization that actually your fear, my fear, is often irrational. And so we can overcome our fears. We can actually overcome lots of our negative experiences. That might be fear, or that might be worry, or we can even overcome shame and guilt. Anything that holds us from truly enjoying this this amazing gift of this human life on earth. And so, so many people really don't like their experiences, even though, of course, people don't admit that, but many people really don't like experiences. But then people don't know what to do. Somehow, either people try to run away from their experiences, or they're totally stuck in their experiences. Many people try to run away from their experiences. And there's a remedy that is not mantra most people use, not meditation, but sometimes people use like work, being busy. People use all kinds of substances. Could be alcohol, could be even ice cream, how about that? Or could be even food to run away from their experiences. Definitely people use ice cream. And then many people use alcohol, and some people use really very destructive substances, and which we see today in America, we have this problem. America is dealing with, it is a demon right now. This demon, this very powerful demon, demon of addiction. And we see that I've traveled all over the world. I go to Asia, Europe, and I think I of course love this country, America. America is an amazing country, by the way. We all love America. I think America's a place I want to die, actually. There's no another country in the world where I want to die. I made that kind of promise as an aspiration, by the way. Hopefully I'm not going to die too young. But America's great. I'm not saying that America has all these problems that other countries don't have, but America has its own demon. Every nation has its own demon. I can talk about Tibetan demon, except it will be irrelevant because none of you are Tibetans except me. But we have our own demons too. I'm sure everybody has collective demon that is very much the shadow of any given culture, community, and tribe, or even the family has its own demons too. I think America has a demon. I don't know exactly where it is coming from, but there is a powerful demon of addiction, a demon of psychological issues, loneliness, insecurity, and so forth. That's why you see that so many people are actually just losing their life, or they kind of lose everything. They lose themselves, they lose their soul to powerful, very toxic substances. So anyway, I think people don't like their experiences, and because they don't know how to work with them, and then many people either indulge in those experiences or they try to escape from it. Whereas the Buddhist meditation is not about escaping. It's about just witness whatever is really arising. It's about witness. That's pretty much it. And that's what really mindfulness meditation is. That's what Dzogchen meditation is. Just witness. When you witness, then liberation comes naturally. I heard a neuroscientist just said that the natural lifespan of human emotion, 90 seconds. That's good news, actually. It doesn't feel that way. You know, when we get angry, it can be angry for half hour, you know, until we get ice cream, then we are happy. Everybody's happy once they get ice cream. Actually, there's another method that is much cheaper than ice cream. I can tell you later. But the natural lifespan of a human emotion, 90 seconds. This is really amazing. So each day, and sometimes these emotions take place because they're triggered from some external stimulus or events, or maybe interaction with other people, or sometimes these emotions rise from thoughts. And thoughts are very interesting. Thoughts are often random, and they arise, and then they dissolve. As long as we have this 2 pounds organ called a brain, just thought arises. Thoughts are not actually our own creation sometimes. We are not really the absolute cosmic agent behind our thoughts, even though we think that we are creating thought, we are thinking. But I think thoughts are often just happening as almost a part or expression of life itself too, the nature. So anyway, and when we simply witness, then thoughts, they arise and they dissolve. In the same way, emotions, they come into being and then they go away. They don't really last for a long time. If an negative emotion arises, you simply witness it. You don't hold on to it. You don't try to push it away. And usually they dissolve on their own, right there sometimes. In the same way, we can use this very, very non-judging methods in relationship with thoughts. When thought arise, we simply witness, we don't judge them, and we don't try to push them away. Then they rise, and then they dissolve, just like bubbles and water. Whereas, I think most of the time, in the ordinary world, people are always following their thoughts all the time, pretty much. People really don't have practices where they can be the witness and create a gap between themselves and the thoughts. And so this is what really awareness is right now. I think sometimes we can also use that awareness towards the world right now. Usually as a Buddhist meditator, we tend to practice awareness and relationship towards our internal experiences, the thoughts, the sensations, not so much towards the outer world. But the Buddha actually invited us to not only hold your own experiences in awareness, but also hold the whole world in that non-judging awareness too. I think especially now is a really important time to hold the world in a non-judging awareness. I just read this blog put by one of my friends, a wonderful Dharma teacher, and she talked about this is a time for us not too much try to understand the world, what is happening in the society by the thinking, but by reflecting. So she is actually inviting us to, I think this was from Trudy Goodman. I'm sure many of you know Trudy Goodman, a very wonderful Dharma teacher from the Spirit Rock Sangha, and also Inside Elia. I'm not quoting her correctly, but I just read her blog just recently. I'm paraphrasing her. So this is also for us to time to just witness the world and hold the world in that non-judging awareness. As a today, I think many people are very much distraught in this part of the world, but also everywhere too. And this has to do with lots of external events, political events as well. I have many friends who are really right now distraught, unhappy, and some of them are thinking about moving away from this country. And they are basically fantasizing to move to whatever, France or Portugal. So there are lots of right now unhappiness, mainly caused by not just one factor, but lots of factors, but especially the political chaos that you're witnessing. I don't know in which aisle of political you belong to, doesn't really matter. But this is a time for us to just sometime just take a break from the thinking mind and hold the world, everything that is happening, the event, the political event, social event, and everything else in that non-judging awareness. And so we may find a sense of equilibrium, peace, stillness, as well as wisdom. And not only that, maybe we're able to open our heart and to maybe hold everybody in our compassion, hold the whole humanity in our compassion. The universal compassion has no bias. The universal compassion has no boundary between us versus them. The universal compassion actually holds everyone, everybody, even those who have a different religion, those who worship different God, and those who have pledged to different political doctrines. The universal compassion has no bias. Maybe it is a good time to invoke some Buddhist archetypes. Lots of people in the Eastern space in Mahayana Buddhist countries have a very strong affinity with the archetypes, the sacred archetypes, like the Buddhist in Asia, like China and Japan and Tibet, have a very strong devotion affinity with the archetypes, like archetypal Buddhas, Bodhisattvas. Some of the very powerful archetypes or archetypal Buddhas or Bodhisattvas are Dara and Avalokiteshvara. It feels that this is a very relevant time to invoke some of these archetypal Buddhas. In the East, sometimes when you just when you mention even name of Avalokiteshvara, people would feel immediately something in their heart, because they have been, their ancestors have been actually somehow praying to these archetypal Buddhas, even though they do reside in you. Avalokiteshvara is just another name for your innate universal compassion. In the same way, Dara is just another name for your innate universal love. But when we say sometimes name of this archetypal Buddhas like Avalokiteshvara, and then people immediately feel some kind of shift in their consciousness right there, even though they don't feel swimming immediately the ocean, divine ocean of universal compassion, but they feel some kind of shift right there. And so when people get scared sometimes in my culture, when people get angry, when they don't know what to do with their fear, with their anger, they often actually somehow invoke in their consciousness this archetypal Buddhas like Avalokiteshvara or Dara. And sometimes they recite the mantra, their names, that help them to experience some kind of shift. So this is a relevant time to invoke some of these archetypal Buddhas, either we chant their mantras or not, but we can use them as a powerful archetypal beings or Buddhas, and that can help us to maybe experience the universal love and compassion. So Avalokiteshvara is a Buddha as well as a Bodhisattva. In Tibetan cult, in Tibetan Buddhism, Avalokiteshvara appears in the form of male Buddha. Avalokiteshvara has many forms, four arms, 1,000 arms. In the Chinese Buddhism, Avalokiteshvara appears as a female, this loving mother, Kuan Yin. Her name is Kuan Yin. Kuan Yin and Avalokiteshvara are same in their essence. We always recite prayer to Kuan Yin or Avalokiteshvara. In the East, there are even these mountains which are dedicated as the divine abode of Avalokiteshvara. These mountains are in India as well as also in China as well. People sometimes go on pilgrimage to those sacred mountains so they can experience the consciousness of the Avalokiteshvara, which is the universal compassion. But Avalokiteshvara has a legend, it's a really powerful legend. I think I told this legend so many times. You may have heard that legend in my other talks too. There's this legend. You don't have to take this legend literally, but it's a beautiful legend. It said that Avalokiteshvara vowed that he or she is going to awaken and liberate all beings in the world of suffering. And he vowed, or she vowed, to bring all beings in the world to the Buddhahood. And then Avalokiteshvara liberated everybody. And then Avalokiteshvara thought, now there's nobody in the world of suffering. Everyone is enlightened. Now it's time for me to enter the eternal peace. And then Avalokiteshvara looked back. The world is full of all these confused and lost souls as before. Then Avalokiteshvara come back, liberated everybody, and told to herself, now there's no more confused beings, no more enlightened beings, because I brought all beings to the Buddhahood. And then Avalokiteshvara thought that now this is time for me to enter into the eternal nirvana, means the eternal retirement. And then Avalokiteshvara did that 6 times. And every time she thought that nobody in the world, everyone's enlightened. And she looked back, and the world is filled with enlightened beings. And then finally, Avalokiteshvara said to herself, I cannot do this. I'm going to give a bodhisattva as well. In that moment, power of losing his bodhisattva, or her bodhisattva, her body fell into many pieces. And Avalokiteshvara was in pain, this agony. And then suddenly Buddha Amitabha, Buddha of infinite light, came and blessed that broken body of Avalokiteshvara into 1,000-armed Avalokiteshvara. And this is the legend of these different forms of Avalokiteshvaras, the Buddha of or the Bodhisattva of Compassion, Tibetan Buddhism, the 4-armed Avalokiteshvara, or the 1,000-armed Avalokiteshvara. Today, it is a relevant time to invoke that archetype of Buddha, the Avalokiteshvara. So Avalokiteshvara means that one who gazes upon all beings. The Avalokiteshvara is actually a Buddha who is inside you, who always gazes upon everyone, upon sorrow, upon the whatever, the tragedies, all the ugliness of the world. But she or he never closes his heart. She or he never loses his or her joy and stillness. That's really what Avalokiteshvara is. Avalokiteshvara, Shandesa, means one who gazes upon all beings, upon the world, who never close her eye of awareness, eye of universal compassion, and yet hold the world in his or her compassion, and not being despondent, not being angry, and not lose the equilibrium. And so this is, I feel, the relevant time to invoke Avalokiteshvara in each of us. And all the Tibetan Buddhist teachers say, and they remind us again and again that Avalokiteshvara is within each of us. And sometimes it may be not so difficult to awaken your innate Avalokiteshvara, which is really who you are, your true nature. Maybe the way is unbelievably simple. Maybe the way is just to witness. Just witness. witness with ease every now and then. One of you approached me during that 10 minutes break. You said, you came to my talk last year. I don't remember, but you remember what I said. I think you said I told you relax, something like relax, and let world explode. And you told me that you have been using that as you didn't say exactly, but you told me that has been somehow meaningful to you. Maybe this is time for us to relax every now and then, witness, and not to judge, not to be so lost in anger, taking sides, liking these people, and maybe hating these people. Maybe you just have to witness every now and then. Maybe every now and then there's some kind of a dharmic way or enlightened way of reading news. Maybe you can just sit in lotus posture and turn on the smartphone and go through the news, just witness. Imagine that the Avalokiteshvara is awakened in your heart and your wisdom eye is just witnessing the chaoses, the confusion, the craziness of the world, with the total compassion, and not being somehow disillusioned with the world, not being angry. When we witness, what do we see? We see this world is basically this self-continuing dance of anicca, or anicca in Sanskrit, impermanence. That's all we see. We don't see so much good or bad, but we see that the world is in this continuous dance, the impermanence. That's all we see. We don't see anything else. All the conditions, everything's constantly changing. The old things are collapsing and new things are coming into being. So no later the new things become old and they would collapse too. And tomorrow is totally different, isn't it? tomorrow when you wake up, the world could be totally different. Everything's changing. When you look into your own life, you see everything's constantly changing. And some of these changes are actually very inspiring too. Meeting, separating, they're all happening. And then also even the external world, society, politics, everything is constantly changing. Nothing is everlasting. And this is how the world has been all along, since from its existence. And then seeing everything is impermanent, maybe you can find peace, equilibrium, and even compassion. And also we can see that everything that is happening is actually beyond our control in ultimate sense. All the events which are happening in the world, either in your life or in a more societal level, are also very much a manifestation of what Buddhism calls interdependence. All is happening, all is arising through the power of interdependence, the interdependence of an immeasurable number of cause and conditions. So often what is happening in our life beyond is not under our control. So we may have to sometimes surrender to what is happening, either in your life or in the world, and just bear witness. Thank you, everybody. Much gratitude.